guys, welcome to the Blaspheme Global Podcast. I am Lucy.
And I'm Eugene.
And welcome to the Australian Open review.
Yeah, wrap-up show.
Wrap-up show. And I am so glad that it's finally over.
We got our sleep back.
The way I was sleeping today, I'm not going to lie, I low-key did not want to pod today because I'm actually so tired. I just wanted to spend my day sleeping. But
I hear that. I hear it.
Yeah, but at least that's all done now. What about you, Eugene? How are you feeling?
It's exactly like you, sleep deprived or depraved, whatever the word is. Mm-hmm. It was funny. I was at my dad's during the week, mm-hmm. and he was like, "Oh, look at your eyes. You look so tired." I was like, "Yeah, Daddy, I've been up till the middle of the night watching Australian Open."
It's obviously crazy that we've done.
Go on.
It's crazy that we've done it so many times, yet we never get used to it at all.
I've got a funny story as well that I'll get into later on, relating to work, but we'll talk about that later on. Okay. But it's it involves sleeping in, but yeah, I'll get to it later on. But yeah, exactly. It's been what, 4-5 years of us kind of covering it for the platform, and it's still a challenge.
Exactly. Yeah, it really is. But you know, we do it for the peoples.
Indeed.
Because we love it too. And speaking of the peoples, as you know, guys, we started going back to our voice messages. I did forget to remind some people, but I think we've had some listeners that actually did remember from our last pod. So instead of sharing the voice messages at the end, we're actually going to share it now at the beginning. So we're about to share a voice message from one of our listeners. Thank you so much for dropping them, guys. If you want to check the description or check on our website, how to send a voice message. I didn't catch this person's name, but again, massive thank you. But yeah, let's see what this person says.
Hi guys, big fan of the pod and your platform as a whole. Honestly, lovely work. Thank you very much. Even though we kind of, in the second week, all our BSG players are out, singles, doubles, everyone, I found out that we have one juniors girls player and an American player, Frodin. She's 17, and I recognize the name because she was apparently some of the younger tennis shots and scenes in King Richard. She portrayed Serena in some of those scenes, and yeah, she's currently in the quarterfinals of the junior girls draw, so yes, hoping we live with something. But yeah, this AO has honestly been very forgettable overall, but We move.
Well, thank you so much for your message. We did plan to definitely talk about Thea Frodin. So we will mention her towards later on. But I do want to touch on her message about the Australian Open being dull. And guys, I feel like I am winning because I have been telling you guys, the Australian Open ain't all that. Okay. Craig is distracting you with the 1-point slam and turning the Australian Open to a festival, and you guys are not even realizing that is just a mess. Do you know what? I think for me at the beginning, it was kind of a few interesting stories. And unfortunately, a lot of the matches had so much hype and, you know, hope. And then when we started watching it, it was just not really giving as much. You had so many people saying until the semifinals that, oh, this was a very... like, this has been, like, a very dull tournament and so on. But, yeah, Eugene, you look like you disagree.
It's the same argument every year, Lucy. Like, people always say, oh, like, it's not been great or, yeah, it's been boring. I always say, like, you can kind of find the joy, like, where you want to find it. And for me, yeah, there were, like I said, like, we stayed up watching like quite a lot of the matches, and I did enjoy quite a few of them. I mentioned that in the previous pod, I enjoyed Mboko versus Towson. That was a really good match. I think it was a third round or fourth round match. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed a lot of Shelton's matches as well, because I thought Ben Shelton played really well in his like quarterfinal run. And yeah, I think that kind of has been the kind of general talk, like up until the semi-finals, that is, especially the men's semi-finals, that has been like things really lit up. Because it was like basically both of those matches went to five sets.
A lot of
drama as well, like in between. But I think just overall, I'm just speaking as a tennis fan, like I've enjoyed just watching like Grand Slam tennis, like I always do. So, and yeah, I don't know. I don't know. There is definitely something about the Australian Open that maybe for some people it just doesn't like quite work for them. And maybe it is to do with like the time zone, like because it's such a huge time difference. So it's difficult for people to kind of keep up in real time. But yeah, me personally speaking, I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, okay, Fez. I think for me it just doesn't really change. I said it a lot of times, Australian Open is not really for me and all that. But either way, we still had our champions. Obviously, the women's were first. We had the finals, Aryna Sabalenka and Elena Rybakina. And I actually made a tweet saying Elena Rybakina will win a Grand Slam this year. I did not know which Grand Slam she was going to win. I have no idea. All I knew is that for sure she was going to win a Grand Slam this year. And it was a really good final. It was very tight. But I'm happy for Rybakina. I think, you know, I enjoy her, watching her play. I think some people, what they don't like about her is what I like. I like players that are hard to read. You don't know what to expect. So it's a lot more fun. I think for me, the most interesting bit about the final, Eugene, was the third set, Sabalenka. I always knew this match was going to go into three. But the third set, Sabalenka was nearly like there.
Three love up?
Yeah, she was three love up. Or two love up, one of them two. And Vukov literally just said to Rybakina, your energy is low, like fix up your energy. And Eugene, everything changed after that. It was absolutely insane. It was the scariest thing, not scary, but it was just like, whoa, like it's crazy how that quit just sends to saying, hey, you need to just fix your energy. It just changed the whole dynamic. From that moment, she broke her. I think she won like 4 or 5 games straight. Like she was just back to back. And I was just like, hello? So I was like, oh, shoot. Okay. Obviously, you know, I don't want us to go back to the incident with the coach, but I think for me, the reason why it was an eye-opener is because it was the first time I saw what they've been talking about regarding her and her coach. So it was just really interesting seeing that. But either way, you know, she had a great run, a very great match. I have a question for you, actually. Do you think Sabalenka will eventually win a non-hardcourt slam? Because she's been back-to-back finals, which is great. All Grand Slam finals, she's there or she's nearly there. But
if yeah, you think
about it, they're all hardcourt. And I find it interesting how she doesn't get a lot of like heat for having just hardcore. I'm not saying that she should, but you know, when Osaka was, you know, before maternity, they were calling her hardcore specialist, you know. They were trying to throw that to Coco at one point as well, although, you know, she grew up on clay as well. So I find it interesting that's not really mentioned to Sabalenka when all of her Grand Slams are that. And that was, and I believe last year was her first Roland Garros final. So yeah, do you think she'll get to that point where she?
Yeah,
Do you think it'll be this year? Let's make it a little bit more tough.
I've got a feeling someone's going to win Wimbledon, and I'm going to say it closer to Wimbledon, and it's not going to be Sabalenka, but I do think she has a shot at the French, definitely, because she's been there before. So it could be the French Open, and obviously she's going to be hurting like after another Australian Open final defeat. So it could well be the French. We'll see. But I want to ask you a question with the Vukov interaction. Do you think that Because obviously now the coach's pod, like it's literally on the court, like it's in that corner. Like, do you think that also had an effect? Like, so say if, you know, the court coaches usually sit in the stands, like, so they can't necessarily get a message down to a player as clearly. Like, so do you think that benefited? Well, clearly it did benefit Rebekah, having the coach literally right in her corner like that.
100%. I think it benefits all players. We've seen so many players nearly falling down from even Sinner and Alcaraz a little bit, especially Sinner, for instance. So, yeah, it did. Because, like I said, all it took was for that one sentence.
Mm.
You know, your energy is low and everything changed. Like, I knew it was going to go to three. And then when it got to three, I was like, Sabalenka's winning this. And she was 2 or 3 love up, or however she was. And all he said to that girl was, hey, your energy is low. And everything was like a switch. Now, I'm pro coach. I like the fact that the coaches get their little trophy, whatever they get at a ceremony. I like the fact that they sit down next to the thing. I feel like coaches should also be interviewed for posts. I feel like journalists should be able to request for a post-match interviews to coaches. I know for like the smaller, sometimes, for example, Wimbledon, we were able to interview Baptiste and Eric because they were both in there, also with Franklin. So I feel like we need more of those.
I think that's coming. I think we are going to get to that point.
I don't think so.
Really? Okay. I don't think so. We'll see.
I don't think so. I feel like things will change, but I don't think it will be like other sports where at the end of the football, you're talking to the sports manager and blah, blah, blah. At the end of this, you talk that. I don't feel like we're going to get that. I think they're trying some things a little bit, but when you have players even complaining about this is an individual sport, you know, Fritz, for instance, he was very like strict on it. Like, no, this is an individual sport that we can't be having people talking to players and whatnot, blah, blah, blah. But then you look at the fun that we get from when, you know, Brian Shelton is talking to talking to ESPN while he's in a box, and it's literally one of the best things ever. Like, you know, at the end of the day, that opponent is still there fighting, you know? Okay, yeah. Vukov did tell her to bring her energy up. And okay, yeah, it helped, but she was still the one who had to bring her energy up.
Of course,
and
to
lift her.
I think with Fritz, though, I think he was more referring to the whole, like, basically being coached during a match, like, in terms of...
But wouldn't you say what Vukoc did was kind of coaching?
No, of course it is. But my point is, in terms of what you were saying about coaches being interviewed after matches, I feel like we're going to get to that point where that's going to become a thing. Like, not just at the Grand Slams, like... It'll be if they're requested by the media, they will have to talk.
I feel we have a long time coming for that because they scrapped it off. We used to have it. There was times where coaches used to. Are we all forgetting? It was literally a time coaches used to come all the way down to the players, the WTA players, telling them this, that, then going back up. It all got scrapped away. I don't feel that's coming back. Unfortunately, and if it does, I don't think it'll be in our lifetime.
At least I think you're misunderstanding. I'm talking about talking to the media, though.
I'm just talking about as a whole. So I'm including your point.
Okay.
I'm including my point. I'm talking about coaches in tennis. Remember how we had this discussion before where it's like people like to keep coaches in the corner and that's it.
So on court coaching.
Whether it's on court coaching, whether it's interviewing, whether it's them sitting down where they sit down so close, like an Australian Open. Whether it's all of those things, I feel like in general it should just be more involved. But I don't feel like that's going to change because of the fact that I feel like more things have been done to move coaches away, except for what the Australian Open is doing. The Australian Open always does things differently, and this slam has proved it anyways.
Mm.
So
okay.
We'll see. But shout out to Elena Rybakina, shout out to Arina Sabalenka. She's consistent, so you have to give her credits for that, even though she lost. But these finals and finals, she needs to convert them. They need to start converting to actually winning. And I'm interested to seeing how the season goes for that.
Hi guys, this is just a quick break. If you are enjoying our show and our podcast, please make sure to leave a review and rate our show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other DSPs. This will help us to reach a wider audience just like you and get a lot more listeners so we can keep on building our community and give you these great podcasts as well.
And if you're watching on YouTube, please make sure you subscribe.
And as you can see here, our beautiful merch. Make sure you go on Blackspin Global Podcast to cop our merch. This actually helps us fund this platform to keep on giving you these podcasts and most importantly, to attend to the tournaments. And now we'll head back to the show. Thank you again for listening and tuning in.
But yeah, like you said, shouts out to Rebecca, two-time Grand Slam champion now.
Yeah.
And yeah, worthy. Like she's a top player. And now she's kind of, I guess, further establishing herself like amongst the best. So yeah, good on her.
Yeah, for sure. As for the men, history was made. Carlos Alcaraz has finally won the Australian Open, his first Australian Open, his first Australian Open final, the first to beat Novak Djokovic in an Australian Open final.
Crazy.
The youngest to gain all of this. All
complete of the set.
Grand Slams at the age of 22. And he apparently even said just right now at press, saying, I'm already thinking about how long girls. I'm leaving nothing for anyone. And it just shows to you why he is such a great player. Fantastic final, fantastic turnaround. Novak Djokovic is not getting a number 25 as of right now. Do you think he'll get a number 25, Eugene, before we move on?
I would say no, but I think going by this tournament, it's possible. Like he's shown that he's still got it. And yeah. I am go on.
I feel like people are giving him too much credit because of the fact that he had one player who retired, the other was a complete walkover. I don't think he'll be able to compete to the level that he did against Sinner. Because the thing is that Djokovic is at a time where if his body is rested, he can be a threat. Don't get me wrong. What he's done is very impressive. You can't take it away from him. You know, things happen in sport. Some even were calling him lucky and whatnot. But I can't be too much you know.
Interesting. That's such an interesting... Obviously, yes. You mentioned the walkover in the fourth round. It was Jakub Mensik that withdrew, unfortunately. And then, he got lucky against Lorenzo Musetti, fifth seed, because Musetti was two sets to love up.
This is what I'm saying.
And then retired. But Lucy, like you said, this is sport. That semi-final against Jannik Sinner, of course, yes, he was well rested. But exactly, like, my word, for him to be doing what he's doing at 38 years old, like, I don't know if you saw, you probably did see Joe Wilfred Tsonga. Did you see his, I think he posted it on IG or you basically said, oh, like.
Patrick Mouratoglou, I am so shy for you. I'm actually so shy for you. And Patrick is on Twitter right now fighting people telling, well, see? And he's trying to be like, that's not what I was saying though.
Oh, God, stop it.
It's all right, man. We caught you, but, man. It's all right. Just take the L and move on, innit?
Just personally speaking, like, I just think he deserves a major, major salute because I think he even surprised himself as well, as in Novak, to get the win over Sinner. Mm-hmm. And Sinner had his troubles as well. I think in the, what was it, fourth round against Spaziri with the cramps?
He's had his troubles with, remember I always told you, I feel like Sinner, his downfall would be his body. His endurance and, like, it's weird because he's a good athlete, but not a great athlete.
Yeah. There is definitely talk about him not being able to kind of sustain it, especially in five sets.
He can't play. But one thing that he said, though, is like, something that was very interesting. He said, the issue is I haven't had enough experiences having long matches because I'm always beating these guys. So obviously, he didn't say it like that, but he was like, I'm always...
Basically.
I'm always like winning so quickly. So he's not used to playing a lot of long matches. So when he does... It's like his body's not used to it and he's not used to them type of stuff. But I feel like, for instance, I think because of that, he should change his calendar. So, for example, instead of you going to Hong Kong and being paid crazy amount of money, you should have played a warm-up tournament. one, it would have gotten you ready with the heat. It would have gotten you ready to handle more matches and stuff. But I feel like some players are doing too early the whole, like, I'm not going to play a lot of matches. Unless, obviously, it's because of the fact that they find the calendar too long and whatnot. That I can understand. But other than that, bro, some of you are too young. Get on that damn
course. That's an interesting take.
But that's why Novak was able to do what he was able to do. Because he actually is. That's the thing about Novak. Like, as much as you guys think that I hate him, one thing about Novak is that he's in a fantastic athlete, and that is why he was able to be there for 20 hours literally with against one young player, and when he's way older than them, like, he's literally uncle to them. So yeah, but I feel like the semi-finals to me was definitely more entertaining. Both of them, both semi-finals, Zverev against Carlos Alcaraz, and also Senna and Djokovic. I've always preferred quarterfinals, semifinals rather than finals. It's very rare to have a very entertaining, super high final. That's always been me anyway. So I liked both. I want to tell something quickly. When what did you think of the MTO that Carlos had against Zverev?
I was talking about this to Uche as well. Shout out to Uche. And I was like, to be honest, Lucy, I don't blame Carlos Alcaraz for doing what he did, because obviously on paper, or like according to the rules, you're not allowed to receive medical attention for cramps. Yeah. Which is clearly what he was going through, cramps. Like he was cramping. So that, according to the rules, is like a conditioning thing. So you shouldn't be able to kind of receive any kind of treatment for that. But he didn't say it was cramps. He said it was like a tweak. Like, and you cannot blame him. At the same time, I do feel it for Alexander Zverev, like in terms of just according to the rules, like that shouldn't really be allowed. But then there's no way of proving it, Lucy. So it's like, what do you do?
Yeah, it was, I'm not a fan of Zverev, but hey, I'll put my hands up and say that was absolutely unfair. That was messed up. Carlos knew what he was doing. Carlos played a lot of mind games during that match, and that's what actually helped him play win that match as well. I have one more question and we can move on. Do you think that Zverev will win a Grand Slam one day? Because I used to be one of those people that was saying, guys, I know you guys don't like him and for whatever reason, but I think he's going to win it. I feel like he's going to be one of those players that a lot of fans would be gutted that he's won it for, but I feel like he's going to win it. After that semi-final, I don't think it's going to happen. Awesome. And before I even used to say, you know what, if there's no Senna or Carlos, then maybe. Yeah, but now I'm just like, bro, I don't, because he looked really good this Australian Open, you know, from the first round. I remember the first round was against Gabriel Jalou. He looked really good this tournament. That match against Alcaraz, he had no business losing. That match was in his hand. He played so well. Like, there was one set, I can't remember if it was the first two sets, I can't remember, but Eugene, he was playing so, I was like, yeah, Alcaraz is done. Like, I genuinely thought this match was going to be done in like 3-4 sets. I'm not joking. But if you're unable to beat him with one leg, because for a long time, he could barely even walk around. Unbeaten being with one leg, you had all that situation. You were playing literally some of the best tennis of your life. Like, I don't know. It was just crazy how things went. And like I said, Carlos started doing the mind game stuff where he started like getting the fans to cheer. He even said he gave free, obviously, this is just my speculations, but he said that he gave some Spanish fans free tickets. And apparently he said to them, come and cheer me on. Anyone that knows, I know anyways, a player will always say that to whoever they get tickets to. But if you're facing Zverev, you know that is how to win that match. He knew what he was doing. He's smart. He's not silly. And it's all part of sport. It's just that in tennis, we don't talk about mind games as much. And for me, for a sport that's such an individual sport, I don't understand why we don't talk about the mind games and stuff. It's part of it. It makes it even more entertaining, and it helps them win their game.
I think I think among the older players, you definitely do see it a lot more, just because they're more experienced. So there are going to be a lot of
It's funny because some of them will even some of them will complain about it when they're commentating and stuff. But I don't know. I feel like in tennis, it's kind of looked down upon to be playing mind games and stuff. And to me, it's like out of all of the sports, because it's such an individual sport, that's
part of the sport.
Do you think he's going to win it?
I'm going to say he will. I mean, he's 28, so he's still got time. And on paper, he's literally the third best player like in the world. So,
he's 28.
I can't be one of those people that can say, they're never going to win a Grand Slam. I just think it's unfair. And also it's not realistic considering like what he's done. Yes, he has shown that I don't want to say choke, but like he does struggle when it comes to like getting over the line, like when he's very, very close. And that clearly is an issue, but it can happen, Lucy. It just needs to, everything needs to click just one time. And that is that's more than possible. So I am going to say he will win one. I don't know when it's going to be or which one, but I feel like he will win one in his lifetime, definitely.
Mm. Well, we shall see. Again, massive shout out to Hilaire Rabakunas and to the so-called baby goat, Carlos Alcaraz.
Seven Grand Slams is mad.
That's absolutely insane.
At 22.
That's actually crazy. That's really crazy. That's actually crazy. And he's already saying that, I'm thinking about already Roland Garros. He's insane.
Wow.
Let's go into our players. Obviously, we only had, from the men's and the women's, we only had two players, Ben Shelton, our Americans, Ben Shelton and Coco Gauff. But before we do that, we will talk about Thea Frodin, who reached the semifinals.
From the girls,
From the girls in juniors. To me personally, when I was looking at, when I was going through the juniors, the only, I wasn't familiar with her name till I went on it and I was like, all right, so what's going on? And then I saw her and I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty good. She was also playing doubles, actually. I think the doubles she lost in the quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals, yeah.
Was it? Yeah, mm-hmm. She lost in the quarterfinals with a Serbian, actually. But massive shout out to Thea Frodin.
I think you're going to say her name. You're going to say her name, the Serbian.
No.
Anastasia Vetoković, I'm going to say. Apologies if I butchered that name.
Yep.
But shouts out to both of you for reaching the quarterfinals in the doubles.
the junior, the French junior who won, I think it's pronounced Xenia Efremova. She's French. Apparently she's had an incredible run in junior career. So shout out to her. But Thea Frodin, really looking forward to seeing more of her. I think I also saw, what's his name? I forgot his name, but one of the tennis people on the tier. I'm so sorry, I forgot your name. But they also, I think it was from their tweet as well, that I also found out that she was a doubles for Serena.
In King Richard, yeah.
In King Richard. Very great movie. We also,
and as our listener said as well, in the voice note, she mentioned that as well, in terms of playing the body double for Serena.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we had some great stuff happening. We also had a junior player from Botswana
make history.
Who made history? He became the first Botswana player, either professional or junior, to compete at a Grand Slam. I'm gonna try and pronounce his name, and I'm really sorry if I can't pronounce it properly. Tungamili Ragun.
I think that is how you say it. Yeah, wow. Because I want to say the T is silent, so Tungamili, and then the R in Ragun is also silent, so it's Hagun. I think Hagun.
Okay. Right. Okay. Cool. But yeah, he made history. He made it all the way to the third round. He lost to a junior Brazilian player. But yeah, that was really fun as well, seeing that. It's not, that's one thing I love about tennis, seeing so many people from different backgrounds making some sort of history. So yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on them and keep them posted. And a massive shout out to our followers and listeners, like telling us about them as well. Keeping us in a loop.
Yeah, I do love that.
Yeah.
And guys, when you do send voice notes, please leave your name so we can like shout you out properly. Yeah. Please.
I think even on the feature, it allows you to write your name. I don't know if it's at the end or at the beginning, I need to double check. But yeah, I know the you can only have 1 minute to record, but if not, just type in your name in the message, or send us a message after you send a voice note, and say that you sent one so we know who it is. To just introduce yourself. Oh, you never know, Eugene. Maybe they want to be anonymous.
Well, yeah. Clearly, and then say that if that's the case. But yeah,
I really want to stay anonymous. You know, you never know. But yeah, let's close with our Americans. Who should we start with, Shelton or Coco?
Let's go Coco, just because of the whole Coco. Racket smash thing as well.
So I unfortunately missed her match against Vitalina because of work.
Exactly the same. So
it was so annoying. Like it was actually jarring. And the annoying thing is that normally at that the time the match was on, I don't normally work, but that specific day I had to work at that time. It was so jarring. So I literally missed so much of the match, but from the reactions, the highlights, and everything that I've seen, it was basically, respectfully, like a beat down, but it was a thing of like Coco was just not playing at her best.
Didn't show up
at all, which I did not expect. I knew it was going to be a battle. I remember saying that it was going to be a free setter, and that's why I think I was a little bit more relaxed about missing the match. I was like, okay, I think it's going to be a battle, it's going to be a free setter and whatnot. But I don't know, I was very surprised at seeing.
Before we get into it, can I tell you why I missed the match?
Why?
Lucy, I overslept. So I didn't set my alarm the night before. So
were you late to work?
So I was due to start work at 9 o'clock that morning. I woke up at 20 past 10. So I woke up to a message from Uche saying, WTF?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. I was like, just thinking, what the hell am I doing right now? Like, what have I done? So the first thing I did I didn't contact like my boss. I checked the scores because I was like, I've missed Coco and Cicelina.
You're not serious. Yeah.
When I saw the score line, I was like, damn. But then I was like, okay, Eugene, click into gear now. You need to get ready for work. So then obviously I did, yeah. I eventually got to work at like...
Did you get in trouble with your manager?
No, just before midday. And I told the truth. I was like, listen, I didn't set my alarm. So yeah.
And
I
said,
I've missed all the tennis as well. I ended up doing a full shift. So it's not like I worked like a half day. I did a full shift. So I was due to finish at 5 that day, but I finished at like 8 in the end because I started at midday.
Okay.
So I made up the time. But yeah, I was doubly annoyed that I missed Coco and also the manner in which she lost. I was like, bloody hell. But like you said, shit happens, man.
Shit happens for sure. I think for me, I'm kind of... It's weird because there's so much discussion about how... Oh, Coco... There's a lot of discussion about her mental for that match. And it's interesting because sometimes her mental is also her strength. So that's why I think I get very, I don't want to say irritated, but I'm a bit like, when people always mention her mental, because there are so many matches that we've watched from Coco against an opponent. And that match, Lord knows how she's won it. That's mental. Do you get what I mean? Like, we always cook her for saying, oh, well, not we, but people always cook her for saying, oh, She won ugly. And I remember saying this so many times on the pod. I'm like, why don't you guys flog the opponent that she's lost to? That opponent had no business losing that match. But because of her great, her way of just taking a match away from her opponent, but also because of her mental, because she's fighting through, is why I have a hard time agreeing with people when they mention mental. However, at the same time, for me, I feel like her road to gaining that Roland Garros title was proof that when she is head in, locked in, she's unstoppable. Because her behavior, her mentality, her the way she was during that clay season, we've never seen that from Coco. And that's why, for me, I feel like that's why you were so positive that she was going to win that Roland Garros. I remember you were saying it. You were like, Lucy, there's a twitch. There's something different about Coco, especially after Rome. You were like, she's going to win this Roland Garros. There's something different. Because we saw it. There was like a complete different Coco. So I understand to that aspect. And I feel like if there's a way that she can have, I don't even want to say drive, because she has that drive. She is one of the most hardest working player ever. And I understand the frustration from the players. And I understand the frustration even from her. Like, that's why she went away thinking that she was somewhere in private and broke that racket like crazy. And that, to me, shows how much she cares. Mm. Because people make it seem like she doesn't care. She's, you know, doing the bare the minimum and she does whatever. No, she wants this so bad. There's just sometimes there's just that disconnect between whatever's running through her head and her game. But it's just that it happens a bit too much considering for where she's at, in my opinion. Do you get what I mean? Like, by the end of the day, she's still 21 with two slams. I understand that. But I think, again, it goes back to what we're saying, how, you know, we think too much like the old times where we're used to seeing the old players at 21 doing X, Y, and Z and blah, blah, blah. But she's been a top three player for years. It's only now that she's gone. I think that, she's top four, top five now, isn't it?
Yeah, if you go down to four or five, yeah.
She'll be going up four or five now because of her back canal. But before that, it's been years of her being in that top three. So my wonder is, how do we get the Coco who had that mental mind state on her road to clay during that clay season 2025 today on a constant basis?
Yeah, I think it will come with time, Lucy, in terms of just, obviously she's been on the tour for, like you said,
a very long time.
Since she was 15. So like, yeah, she's almost like a vet at this point. Mm-hmm. But again, like you said, she's 21 years old. So she is literally still developing, like, right in front of us. And I feel like, in terms of just where, yeah, that match against Cicerina, that was definitely, it was, you know, it was done in under an hour. Like, it was a complete, it kind of came out of nowhere as well, because she was playing quite well, like, up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, she did have a few free setters against Baptiste and I think at Mukova as well. But she was playing good tennis. And, like, everybody's kind of entitled, or I say entitled, it's not kind of an anomaly to have a bad day at the office. That was literally a bad day at the office for Coco Gauff. Like, to be done in under an hour against the player that on paper you should be beating. But then again, Cicerina too, like, she's playing inspired right now. Like, back inside the top 10, she's been as high as, what, number three, number four in the world. Like, she's not a scrub.
Uh-huh.
So, like, as kind of shocking as the scoreline was, like, it wasn't a complete surprise, if that makes sense. Because, yeah, Cicerina is a high caliber player. But just to kind of go back to your point about, like, Coco Gauff and, like, the mental state, you make a good point, like, because that is kind of one of her greatest strengths in terms of, like, her mentality. But I think, Lucy, again, I feel like she's also... That's going to improve, even though it's at such a high level right now. That's only going to continue to improve as her game more as well, because there are still tweaks she's making in her game. The serve, we all know about, the forehand as well, which the forehand was pretty solid this tournament. But like, she's still developing. That's my main point. So I'm never going to get too kind of, I don't know, not to say worried, but concern, thinking, oh, like, what's going on? Like, to me, there's no real issue. Like, she's reached the quarterfinals at the Australian Open. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's got the French Open next where she's defending. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if she does defend at the French, because again, her mentality as well is I think every player, when they lose a match, whether it's close or not, like, they just want to get back on the court. And I feel like every single player now, barring Rybakina and Carlos Alcaraz, who've just won, and maybe Novak Djokovic too, because he's tired, but everybody else, they're going to be itching to, like, literally play the next tournament. So I feel like, yeah, just watch this space with Coco. And I feel like it's this year. I've said it already. I feel like she's going to win Wimbledon, Lucy. I feel like this year she's going to win Wimbledon. I'm saying it. I've said it. I don't know. I have a feeling. Yeah.
So you think she's going to defend her RG title?
I don't know about defending RG, but I feel like Wimbledon, I feel like, yeah, I can see it. I can see it. Okay. I might put money on it, and I'm not a gambler.
I think for me, if I saw a little bit more into her going into the second week, then maybe. I think I'm personally not too fast when players don't have a slam for every single surface.
Mm.
I'm Serena's daughter, Clay, you know, and Venus' niece. So, you know, Venus was even ignoring the clay season, bro. No one is, we're still calling her the GOAT. Do you get what I mean? Because a Grand Slam is a Grand Slam. So you never know, like, Wimbledon might be what French Open was for Serena when it comes to Coco. Do you get what I mean? You never know. It might take her a little bit longer. And you need to consider as well, Wimbledon is so tough because, like, she loves clay a lot. So, you know, the season is very short. You're trying to go from clay into, like, Wimbledon, you know, the warm-up events and everything. Like, the only warm-up event that she played last year, which she, even that was tiring her body, was Berlin. And that, remember, we even used to say that it felt like she just went because of the new music.
Sponsor. Yeah.
So, yeah.
I feel like her game matches up well with grass. And I'll say more.
I think so too.
During the grass court season. But yeah, I hear what you're saying about clay. Obviously, she loves clay.
I 100% agree. I just think because of a love for clay and the way that things are set up, and, you know, Wimbledon being so, like, especially like WTA, we've had different winners for years.
Mm.
Wimbledon, it's not been consistent. It just shows to you how weird it is, and even for the men it's still weird, because the one people that kept the same people that have been winning it for years as well, like, Wimbledon is just like a weird tournament.
Yeah.
So yeah, but we'll see. But either way, it's a really great run. At least, you know, she defended her points from last year as well, and, you know, she didn't lose to a player that was just anyhow. As you said, Svitolina has been playing it really well.
What was your take on the racket smash? Because I mean my opinions are out there already, like, but yeah, what was your kind of takeaway, if any?
I don't even know why this is actually a conversation. It's just a racket smash. It's not the end of the world, number one. Number two, I think it is crazy that players do not know where the cameras are. An unpopular opinion is of mine is, I don't think it's bad for the cameras to be behind the scenes. I think it should be limited though.
Okay.
I think there should be one area where there's a camera, where people are walking up and down, and players are aware where it is. But it shouldn't be to an extent where ESPN can... Is that ESPN was going through like a CCTV basically and just posting it online. That's crazy. That's an invasion of
privacy. To be fair, it's on YouTube, as in they have a literally channel called Blue Zone. So that literally just shows the grounds, like, literally 24/7, but whenever they start the live feed, it will go on for like hours. And they cut to the gym, the
all of that,
the player lounge, and like the corridors, like where the players walk to like get to the stadium and stuff like that.
So that's what I'm saying. So like stuff like going to the stadium or making your way to the gym or making your way to these things. That's fine, like corridors, you know, like public corridors and stuff. I don't think there should be a camera in the gym. I don't think there should be. Or at least let the players know there's a sign like, hey, the cameras are here, so at least they can know.
Yeah, because, yeah, that makes sense.
Because that because I like the idea of the cameras. It makes it a little bit fun. We've seen so many fun interaction from it. We've seen, do you get what I mean? Like, you need to think about it.
It's invasive. It is invasive though, Lucy, man.
It is invasive, but that's what my proposition is. Do it in areas that doesn't seem too like, this is meant to be my, like, why is there a camera in a gym? To me, that doesn't make sense. There shouldn't be cameras at a gym. To me, that doesn't make sense. Should not be any cameras at a gym. But if you're walking down a corridor, I think that's calm. Do you get what I mean? You can see the interaction that they have with the thing and blah, blah, blah. But at least let the players know, because that was Coca's point. She was like, I even went out of my way to hide somewhere to make sure that no one is there. So that was the purpose of it. Only to come and find out it's all over the internet. Do you get what I mean? And even if people like me feels like, okay, it's not a big deal, she still did not want that to be out there. And that right.
Yeah,
but it just shows you how Craig does not give a damn. He would do anything to expose and do the most for
no. To be fair, he did come on, I think it was a Tennis Channel, and say that they're going to be talking to or listening to the players now, and that is literally off the back of Coco Gauff saying Coco's that we need to have words.
You also had Alexis and Serena defending her as well on Twitter and stuff, and she even made a fun interaction saying, I will show you how to do that. Serena's now just one smash. Serena, please feel free to show her many other things as well, you know. Speaking of Serena, I know we can quickly touch on this. You know, she did do an interview saying,
she's coming back. She's coming back. Well, but we already said this, that like,
I think we said it offline.
We touched on it during, I think,
during the thing. Yeah, but this interview was just recently, and this one is actually was caught red-handed, like,
because of the testing pool thing. Yeah, she's definitely coming back, man. Well, it's going to be either Wimbledon or US Open. I wouldn't be surprised if it's US Open.
Well, we'll see you, Serena, if we see you. Coco Gauff, well done for an incredible run. That last match does not take away all the hard work that you have done. I know you've gone a little bit down with the rankings, but I know you'll get back up. And that's just the beginning of the season. Up next, we have Benny Shelton.
Shelts.
Who lost to Yannick Sinner in straight sets. Now, although it was a straight sets defeat, I think that was one of the best matches Shelton played against Sinner. For me personally, I think that was one of the. I think he used a lot more weapons. I think he made it a little bit more challenging for Sinner, and I think Sinner felt it. Sinner looked like he was like, "Oh, thank God!" at the end of the match, like, and you didn't really get that reaction from him from the other opponents, mind you. When he was even the other like Elliot Spizzeri, like, he was already down and stuff. He didn't react that way, but I think these players, they're well aware that Sinner's like, I mean, sorry, that Shelton, hey, he can be dangerous. And that was just one of them. It's just Sinner was just like, Shelton was not playing bad that match, bro. Sinner was just being Sinner. It was just unbelievable. But yeah, great run. He played really well. Honestly, this tournament, I feel like he played better than I expected. I wish he was able to collect one set, you know, his collective sets before against Alcaraz, for instance. Sinner's just that one person where I just, but again, this is someone that's hard to beat in general, which is why I don't understand why. I know we don't want to dwell too much on the negative, but it is really frustrating whenever Shelton loses to Sinner and people talk about Shelton anyhow. And it's like, bro, everyone is losing to him right now. So I don't understand why when Shelton's the one losing to Sinner, you guys have so much to say. But yeah, I'm not too worried. Again, losing to a player that everyone is losing to, or a very hard opponent, it's not the end of the world. It's frustrating. It's not the end of the world. But again, like I said in the last pod, I think Shelton will be the first American to win a Grand Slam. So great run. I'm looking forward to it. I think he's playing Dallas. I think so. I can't remember. But yeah. What did you think of Shelton?
Yeah, no, I enjoyed Shelton. I watched a lot of Shelton. And yeah, I was very impressed with what I saw, Lucy. Like, I feel like he's improved a lot since last.
You can tell that he worked this off season.
Since last year, and I'm excited to see what this year brings. Considering 2025 was such a good year for him anyway, and like you said, to lose to Sinner, like, that is There's no shame in that. Like, defending champion. Obviously, Sinner does end up losing to Novak Djokovic in the next round, but just a solid showing from Ben Shelton. And again, I wrote about it in terms of just him kind of almost. He believes that he's getting closer to kind of cracking it in terms of, you know, beating these top guys, particularly Sinner, because he has, I think he's lost to him like the last four Grand Slams. Mm-hmm. So that in itself tells you all you need to know. Like, he's not losing to, you know, guys he shouldn't be losing to. Like, and also too, Lucy, like, and again, we stress this quite often, like, he's come from college and like just completely, just I say he's taken to life pretty quickly, like on the ATP tour. Considering like his elevation, like the rise has been quite quick, but it's been steady, and he's shown that like he can compete with these top guys because he's an established top 10 player. So that in itself for me is huge, and I just feel like I said I'm excited to see like what 2026 brings, because I this Australian Open run has shown that there's something different about him. I feel. Like, he's beating all the guys he's supposed to be beating, like, pretty convincingly. He didn't drop a set up until that Sinner match.
Yeah.
So he's playing very, very good tennis. And, like, obviously Australia as well. Like, that was his fourth quarterfinal. Third quarterfinal in his fourth appearance. So
crazy.
It's, like, it's just incredible, like, what he's been able to do in such a, like, short period of time. So, yeah, definitely looking forward to seeing him for the rest of the year.
For sure. Me too. But yeah, I think that's all we have.
I did mention, we didn't talk about, and this is my fault, we didn't talk about Venus Williams in the last part.
I didn't realise that. I generally, when you even said it before we started recording, I was like, that does not make sense.
So my fault there. She did lose.
Our fault, you know.
She did lose to Danielovic in three sets in the first round. There was a lot of talk about, oh, why is she getting a wild card, like her age? And
I mean, we spoke about that on the preview pod already.
But she showed she's still able to get to compete as well. So shouts out to Venus. Mm. She played doubles too with Katerina Alexandrova. Mm-hmm. They did lose in the first round, but yeah, it's good to see her still competing. And like you said, it does look like Serena's coming back, and you can probably put money on them playing doubles together at some point. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it's going to be US Open, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yep. So that's it. Australian swing is over. We are off to the Middle East in a WTA. As you know, well, some of you may know, the ATP is kind of everywhere. Eugene, do you know right now Montpellier is the qualifying is on?
Yeah, indoors.
And Moise Kouame just won his qualifying match against Elias Immar literally just now.
Damn.
Yeah, no.
Why can't they just give him a wild card as well?
I don't understand. I really don't understand. I don't get it. Fun thing about that tournament as well, Arthur Fils will be back, his first match back.
Giovanni as well playing, I think.
Giovanni's playing and Felix is playing in that tournament. So that basically starts
Monday. Yeah. Tomorrow. Is Felix the defending champ? Or am I getting that wrong?
I can't remember.
I want to say Felix.
Is it?
I want to say he is, you know.
I can't remember top of my head. I think he is. But yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting. That's a lot of guys to look out for.
For sure. And then you have Dallas the week after. You have Shelton. You have Francis Tiafoe and Gabriel Jallo. And obviously some memorable mention as well. You have Fritz, Tien, Nakashima.
A lot of Americans.
Kogoli. Oh, wow. This is stacked. Yeah, it's a very stacked.
That's not this week. That's the week after, you said.
Yeah, the week after.
Because I think there's only one ATP event this week.
Yeah, there's only one ATP event. There's one WTA right now as well.
I think there's two or three WTAs this week. I know there's Ostrava too, because Parks is playing. Alicia Parks is playing that.
Yeah, so there's Ostrava, there's Romania.
No. Yeah.
Romania and Czech Republic. And there's also Abu Dhabi right now. Hayley Baptiste is actually playing as we speak. She was supposed to be qualifying, but we had quite a few players dropping out of the tournament. I think, did King Wenzheng pull out? I think basically that tournament, quite a few people pulled out. Obviously, we're back in our, she just won, so she pulled out and stuff. So that is why you have quite a few people who got through the wild card, and Baptiste is one of them. I think it just went into three sets. It's gone into three
sets. Yeah, she's into a third, yeah.
Yeah, as we are talking right now. But yeah, there's quite a few little tournaments. But yeah, obviously we'll be on socials keeping you updated. Thank you guys for tuning in this Australian Open. Again, feel free to send some voice notes. I will send a reminder for our next pod. Wow, Eugene, shout out to us. We podded a lot.
But I was going to say, who the hell do we think we are podding like, what, 3-4 times in a month?
Yeah, so yeah, I think we deserve a good break right now. So probably see you guys in 2 weeks or something like that. We'll see what the schedule is saying. But as you know, we're always active on social, so we'll catch you guys there. Get your rest, relax, chill. No more waking up at 3 a.m. to be checking the scores and matches. We are free from Craig and that tournament. We shall catch you guys later.
There you go, guys. And congratulations again to
Carlos Alcaraz.
We're backing up.